The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan, published by Ballantine Books, New York, New York, in 1989. This is a book about mothers and daughters facing each other through all the veils that separate their cultures and their generations. In 20 intricately interwoven vignettes, Amy Tan probes the love, the passion, the humor, and the deep exasperation that mold their relationships, and celebrates the unpredictable tenacity of the mother-daughter bond. The dedication to this book reads, "To my mother and the memory of her mother. You asked me once what I would remember. This and much more." Su Yuan Wu was suddenly dead. Many years earlier, she had brought to America a swan that was said to have once been a duck. At that time, she promised herself that she would have a daughter who would grow up just like herself. And like that duck, transformed into a swan by stretching its neck, her American daughter would unfold into someone unexpected. Now, Su Yuan's daughter, Jing Mei, was invited to take her mother's place at the east corner of the mahjong table in the meeting of the Joy Luck Club, where four friends from four different corners of China for years had come together every month, hoping, like the four winds, to breathe success and happiness into the trajectories of their bright game tiles. Su Yuan had told her daughter many times about the origins of the Joy Luck Club. As a young military wife in China, she had been left, along with her twin baby daughters, to stay for safety in the enchanted mountain city of Kuilun. Though the Japanese army had not as yet penetrated there, refugees flooded in from every pocket of the country until Kuilun lost its enchantment. Finally, on a summer night so hot that even the moths fainted to the ground, Su Yuan turned away from the unbearable smells floating up through the sewers and decided to hold a gathering of four women, one for each corner of my mahjong table. Each week, one of us would host a party to raise money and to raise our spirits. The hostess had to serve special foods, dumplings shaped like silver money ingots, boiled peanuts for conceiving sons. People in the city thought we were possessed by demons to celebrate. But was it worse to sit and wait for our own deaths or to choose our own happiness? Each week, we could hope to be lucky. That hope was our only joy. And that's how we came to call our little parties the Joy Luck Club. Su Yuan had finally fled Kuilun just ahead of the Japanese slaughter. "I lost everything," she told Jing Mei as the girl grew older. "Everything?" gasped Jing Mei. "What happened to the babies?" But her mother's story always ended there. Tonight, however, just weeks after Su Yuan's death, the story was continued. The three remaining ladies from the Joy Luck Club, Jing Mei's unofficial aunties, addressed her by her Chinese name and handed her a check for $1,200. Through her mother's untiring queries over the years, they told her, the missing twin babies had at last been found. And now the aunties had taken up a collection to send Su Yuan's American daughter for a visit with her older Chinese sisters. "Tell them about your mother," said Auntie Ying, the south wind at the mahjong table. "What will I say?" asked Jing Mei. "I don't know anything." A friend had once told her she was very like her mother. The same wispy hand gestures, the same sideways look, and Su Yuan had seemed insulted. "You don't know little percent of me," she had said. "Not know your mother," cried Auntie An Mei. "How can you say that? Your mother is in your bones." And at that moment, Jing Mei saw that all the aunties were seeing their own daughters in her face. Daughters who think they are stupid when they explain things in broken English. They see that joy and luck do not mean the same thing to their daughters. That to these closed American minds, joy luck is not a word. It does not exist. The prodigy. Of all the Joy Luck Club daughters, Waverly Jong was Jing Mei's closest friend. At age 9, Waverly had become intrigued with a second-hand chess set and emerged as a local prodigy, Chinatown's littlest chess champion. "Of course, you can be a prodigy too," Su Yuan assured her daughter. But after many anguished months at the library, on the piano bench, and in the museum, it was finally determined that Jing Mei was not to become a prodigy after all. "You just aren't a genius like me," Waverly announced, smiling. The red candle. "Blow like the wind," instructed Waverly's mother, Lin Do, standing over her daughter's chessboard. "Blow from the north, south, east, and west." Lin Do was not really sure which chessmen moved in which direction, but she knew about the wind. Many years earlier in China, she had been joined in an arranged marriage to the teenage son of a prosperous family. When months passed, however, and she did not conceive, her mother-in-law, Huang Taitai, was advised that the girl had too much metal. A girl with too much metal would find it difficult to conceive sons, who grew best in a belly where their own strong metal balanced a deficiency. So Huang Taitai removed all the metal wedding bracelets from Lindo's thin arms and consigned the girl to bed, to ensure that the seeds planted by her son did not fall out. But the fact was, her son was planting no seeds. Dismayed and shamed by his aversion to women, he lived in sullen silence, while Lin Do obediently awaited whatever destiny might decree for her as his true spiritual wife, in a marriage sealed forever by a red candle, which, or so the matchmaker had triumphantly declared the next morning, had burned continuously from both ends throughout their wedding night. But now, relieved of her heavy gold bracelets, Lin Do grew light with an unexpected surge of freedom, and once again pondered on what had truly occurred at the time of her wedding. On that gray, windy afternoon, she had waited, weeping, at a neighbor's house to ride the red bridal palanquin. Uneasy rumors swirled in the stiff breeze, blowing from 100 nearby Japanese assaults. "And then I realized. I could see the power of the wind. I couldn't see the wind itself, but I could see it carried the water that filled the rivers and shaped the countryside." That night, banished from her unconsummated bridal bed, Lin Do had sat again by herself. Across the courtyard, under the dozing gaze of the matchmaker's servant, burned the red candle. Then, suddenly, as a thunderclap echoed through the rain, the servant woman started from her half-sleep and fled into the storm, crying out unheard warnings of a Japanese attack. By the time she made her embarrassed return, Lin Do had crossed the courtyard like the breath of the south wind itself and blown out the candle. In careful tears, Lin Do now told Huang Taitai of a dream which had warned her that she was cursed with barrenness and decay because she had entered into a forbidden marriage. "But what about the good binding omen, the wedding candle?" "In my dream," she told her mother-in-law, "the servant left the room and a big wind came and blew the candle out." And so the matchmaker's servant was questioned, and Lin Do left with a little money and a ticket to Peking, the first passage on her long journey to America. One day, Waverly the prodigy turned on her mother. "Why do you have to use me to show off? Why don't you learn to play chess?" Running off into the Chinatown alleyways, she hid in silence for the rest of the afternoon. Days passed. Lin Do wisely said nothing to Waverly about the missed practice sessions, the unused chessboard. "But I knew the strategy," remembered Waverly. "The sneaky way to get someone to fall into a trap." Not until weeks later did Waverly announce, "I'm ready to play chess again." "No," responded the mother who had put her whole soul into her daughter's chess games. "It is not so easy now." And it was not. Waverly was free to return to her practice and her tournaments, but without her mother standing behind her, admiring, uninitiated, and breathing useless instructions into her soul, she never regained her early victories. I had lost my magic armor. I had lost the gift and turned into someone quite ordinary. Years later, on the eve of her own second wedding, Waverly, now a successful tax lawyer, brought Lindo into the city for a style and set. "It's uncanny how much you two look alike," exclaimed the hairdresser, patting down Lindo's wet hair. Waverly's eyes grew narrow as her mother squinted at her through the mirror. "Ay-ya!" said Lindo. "What happened to your nose?" But her daughter's slightly crooked nose, as she discovered when Waverly bent closer, was the replica of her own. "Our nose isn't so bad." Waverly sounded pleased. "It makes us look devious." "Devious?" "It means we're looking one way while following another. We mean what we say, but our intentions are different." "This is good?" asked Lindo. "This is good," said Waverly, "if you get what you want." Independently, mother and daughter had each learned to think for herself and to blow like the wind in order to attain her ends. Ticket to China. Auntie An Mei's words from the Joy Luck Club still haunted Jing Mei. "Your mother is in your bones." An Mei had stories to tell of a long-ago China where she had lived in a fine house with her mother, her merchant father, and his three concubines. What part of Auntie An Mei lived in the bones of her American daughter, Rose, who sat in a psychiatrist's office twice a week to work out her upcoming divorce? And Auntie Ying, dreamy, detached Auntie Ying Ying, who had lost her own concubine mother to suicide. "Chun Wang Qian," Auntie Ying frequently repeated, whispering into the air. "If the lips are gone, the teeth will be cold." Her daughter Lena was an architect, dedicated to the open and independent marriage contract which she shared with her Caucasian husband Harold. Did the meaning of her mother's cryptic chant live anywhere at all inside Lena? On the plane to Shanghai, Jing Mei still wondered how she would know her sisters, and what would she say? But at the airport, all questions ended. There before her stood the answer. Her short hair, her small body, and that same look on her face. She is crying. And I know it's not my mother, yet it is the same look she had when I was 5. And now I see her again, 2 of her. We run toward each other, embracing. "Mama, Mama," we all murmur, as if she is among us. And so, in fact,